Here I am. Larry Schweiger is my guest. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the National Wildlife Federation. This is your opportunity to ask him questions. I've certainly monopolized the first part of the show with him. So many questions. And now it's your turn. So that's what we're going to do when we get back, which we will in a moment. By the way, as always, I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to email me. I answer all those that I'm able to. I'm Art Bell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, at mindspring.com. That's mindspring.com. Art Bell at mindspring.com. All right, Larry, if you're ready, we're going to go to the phones. And
great.
So prepare yourself. Here we go. Westport, California, you're on the air with Larry Schweiger. Good morning.
Good morning, Art and Larry. My question is about what's going on in the Gulf with that oil spew, but a quick reference to that 7.1 earthquake in the Solomon Islands.
Yes.
There's a partial eclipse of the moon that starts about the time the show ends tonight, and that will be visible in the West Coast, PDT, 6 a.m., setting into the ocean, but the point being, once again, Jim Berkman's work really seems to be, again, affirmed. Now, my question concerning the oil spew is, with all that black oil on the surface absorbing heat, then the 255-plus fires that are on the surface spewing smoke into the atmosphere along with more heat, and the dispersants causing further evaporation. Some of the chemicals in those dispersants, I believe, are related to the same thing in chemtrails, which are for weather modification. We've had a couple of horrible floods, one in Arkansas, one in Oklahoma, some battering weather off Cape Cod, and tornadoes up clear up into the Canadian area. And the recent weather pattern has been blowing due north across the Gulf and catching that stream that comes across from the west with huge storms, plus two hurricanes in the eastern Pacific, probably generated from the moisture in that Gulf area, one of which is a Cat 5 and could swing towards Hawaii. It appears to me, quite frankly, that maybe this stuff will trigger that global superstorm. And I'm curious as to whether we should be looking for traces of oil and dispersants in the water that's coming down in these areas to see if this billionaire polluters, BP, are going beyond just the perimeter of the Gulf. I mean, we had white sands that are now black. There's a huge amount of extra heat in that area, and I think it is directly affecting weather way beyond just the Gulf itself, and of course the whole atmosphere and the environment. And I'd like both of your takes on that as a storm tracker, Art, and what you've seen in the past too. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. You want to tackle that one?
Yeah. Let me start by saying that certainly black oil on the surface of water will cause the water to absorb more energy. There are several other factors at play here. One, the heavy use of dispersants has pretty much removed a lot of the oil from the surface. So we're seeing these threads or remnants of these tar balls that we see showing up on the beaches. But for the most part, the oil is below the surface, as I mentioned earlier, because of the dispersants. There are some chemicals going into the atmosphere. I flew over the oil spill at about 3,000 feet elevation, and certainly you can smell the dispersants in the air. But I think the larger climate change phenomenons that we're seeing, particularly these intense storms, the scientists have been warning us for a number of years now that we're going to start to see an uptick in the intensity of storms and the duration of rainfall events, for example. And, I think we're seeing that. And of course, scientists always use the caveat that you can't link one storm to one, to the changing climate. But clearly all the patterns are moving in the direction that the scientists had predicted. I think this has more to do with the carbon we put in the sky than the carbon we're putting in the Gulf at the moment. But because we're talking about such a huge scale of carbon pollution in our atmosphere that it's, even though it's invisible, it is extraordinarily large.
I just maybe I'm wrong. When I was younger, I was Republican myself. Many years, a decade, more than a decade ago, I became a libertarian. And then the environmental mess, I guess, moved me a little further. And I just, politically, I'm still a libertarian, very much so, but I see this, my God, I see this as something that is threatening our existence. And to not pay attention to that, to not begin to actually do something, is just beyond everything I know and can imagine. Anyway, Wildcard Line, I hope. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, Art, God bless you. My name is Cornelius. I'm from Alexandria, Louisiana. I'm about 200 miles from New Orleans. And I wanted to tell you and the Coast to Coast listeners, Mr. Larry and George and your call screener, Jason, God bless y'all. Y'all been praying for us and stuff, so I really do appreciate that. Art, I had called you on the, you know, when you had your prediction line, I said the Saints would win the Super Bowl and it'd be the end of the world. And it looks like it's about happening. So I just wanted to say thank you, and we all appreciate your Art.
Right. Thank you very much for the call, and take care. I guess I've gone through a transition in my life, and people have been listening to me for decades. Have been along for that ride, but this whole environmental issue and what's going on in the world is what I think has pushed me in this direction. Let's say good morning. I believe on the international line, you're on the air with Larry Schwager.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, okay. Hi, Art. Hey, Larry. I've a bit of a comment and a question for each of you. One was, I'm sure you've probably heard about Wetricity, wireless electricity, like, you know, how it converts electricity into a magnetic wave and everything. And yeah, well, anyway, I think if we use a form of taxation and actually supply free electricity to the entire world, we could end our dependence on oil for one thing. And on top of that, we could actually, I think if we boost the magnetic field of the Earth enough, we might be able to stop the charged particles and electromagnetic radiation coming from the sun from destroying our own electrical infrastructure.
Well, I don't know how we provide free electricity to everybody. I don't have a clue how we do that. Nothing in life is free, and that includes solar panels, wind generation, ocean wave generation, hydroelectric, all of it. Nothing is free. So I don't know about providing free stuff to everybody, but beginning to move into in all of those directions is something that, ladies and gentlemen, if we don't do, I mean, that's about it for us. That's how I feel these days. Good morning, you're on the air. I think that'd be first-time caller line.
Hello, Art?
Hi, yes.
Yeah, I'm Wildcard. New Orleans, WRMO. It's great to have you back on, sir. I missed you.
Great to be here. I really wish it was a happier subject to be covering than this.
I do, too. Congratulations on your family. And there are some crazy rumors going around on Facebook, and workers are, first of all, coming down with this is on Google. It's hard to find. Also, it's hard to find this information because it seems like it's being so well controlled that people are dropping dead. With according to one of these workers who seems scared to death of a flu-like symptom that's resistant to over-the-counter cold medication. Also, that whales are being blown up.
What?
And that helicopters are flying over and picking up dolphins. That this thing is much worse than we're being told. And good morning, Larry. I wanted to get your take on it, Art, because you always got your finger on the pulse of this stuff. And are we being told everything? What's going on?
Well, I think it's a really good question. You know, BP has gotten basically permission to create zones around their activities where they can basically control those who are on the water. I've encountered this in several locations now, in our travels, where, you know, BP doesn't want the media to see the cleanup operations. They don't want us, they don't want them to be near the oiled birds, and obviously they want to try to hide the number of species that are dying and are being contaminated. So we know that there are more birds, for example, that are getting oiled than we hear about. In fact, that's one of our efforts, is to try to identify these birds before they die, and to try to get as many into rescue operations as possible. But you know, if we're lucky, we'll maybe identify 10% of the total fish and wildlife species that are being impacted. In the case of marine mammals, the same is true. You know, we know there's one sperm whale that showed up dead, but the total number may be much larger. We just, you know, there's just a lot of unknowns out there, and because the Coast Guard has given BP such control, not a lot is being seen by the media.
Larry, it's worth exploring a little further. There really are a lot of rumors out there that acting behind the scenes, whoever it is somehow sweeping away as best they can the dead wildlife, protecting the PR image, and that in fact it is a hell of a lot worse than we're seeing. Americans, like people of other countries, Larry, are subjected to we'll call it PR. or maybe that could stand for being propagandized, but it is the case. Could that be going on right now? Is that going on right now?
Well, I think certainly BP would like you to see the world through its lens, and it is working hard to do that. It hired former Vice President Cheney's PR person to help, you know, spin the story. And, you know, and I think since you know, since that day, they've been a little more effective at containing some of these stories. One of the things that they did, for example, was to hire up all the charter boat captains to basically sit on the docks at BP's operation rather than take media out onto the water. So when we were taking at 1.5 boats out on the water every day, and we're now down to one or two boats because the other captains have been hired by BP to basically, you know, drink coffee and hang out. So, it's clear that they want to shut down the media attention. There's no doubt about that at all. Anyone who's around there has seen it and knows that it's true. And the full extent of this will not be, it may never be known, because, you know, wildlife die and are lost in the system, and we just don't know about them.
Right. Wildcard Line, good morning. You're on the air with Larry Schweiger and Art Bell.
Hello?
Hello, yes.
Oh, hi. That's me. I try to be optimistic in general, but it just seems so beyond hope. I mean, general common sense tells you that all of this oil being spewed into the ocean, I mean, until August?
At the very least, it ought to be noted here that there's no guarantee that these relief wells are going to cure the problem. No guarantee at all.
Like, how? And then you look at what's behind it and the power that's behind it that has brought us to this point. I'm rereading Family of Secrets, and I'm at the beginning again, and I just got to the point where they were talking about Eisenhower, and he knew because he was like their first project, and he saw it, and he knew. That's why he knew. And this is the same people that are doing this to us, to the planet, and like it just seems so. I feel so powerless. Like they're writing a letter to my congressman, it just doesn't really seem like it's going to do anything. How do we stop this? Because this is just, I can't. There's just no words. I can't even.
I know.
It's devastating in every sense of the word, and this the helpless feeling is just really maddening. And
okay, you know, that's a okay, excellent point, Larry. What can any individual do right now? Is there anything realistically that anybody can do? I can hear the frustration in her voice, and I share it.
I hear that as well, and I have to say that the you know, if you look back over time, I mean, I remember back in the 80s being very, very troubled by acid rain and its damage on our landscape, and we went to Senator John Hines and others, and Senator Hines took this up for us, but we had to marshal the public to be a part of the solution. And I'm pleased to say that we were able to get an acid rain bill passed, and today we have reduced that problem by more than 50%. So there are solutions out there, and it's a matter of us working together. And I believe that by collectively standing up, we can, in fact, we must change our energy course. And that to me is the key question at this moment. If we allow ourselves to be caught up in the dismay and disappointment and just give up on our system, we will continue to see the kind of things that we've been witnessing recently happen more and more. I think it really is. There's another tipping point, and that tipping point is that the American people wake up and demand more leadership from Congress and from every aspect of our federal government to tackle problems like this, to not try to sweep them under the proverbial carpet, but to in fact deal with them head on. And so I think it is frustrated and angry people at the end of the day that will change the course of this thing.
Okay, let's go quickly east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. It's me. All right. Okay, all right. Well, I've been listening to you all night, and I disagree with most of the things you're saying, especially when you're slamming the Republicans. Now, I know when I make my statement, you're going to spin it in some way. So what I'd like to do now is say, if anyone's really interested in this subject, that you get a book called Energy Victory by Robert Zubrin, Zubrin. Read that book, and you'll see, it's called Energy Victory. You'll see that there's a solution to our environmental problems. Our energy independence problems, our transportation problems, and it's American technology invented in the 70s. Brazil is using it to great success, but we're following all the failed models in the world. Cap and trade, all this baloney. All we have to do is legislate that every car sold in the United States is a flex fuel vehicle. That's a vehicle that runs either on gasoline, ethanol, or methanol, or any combination of the three.
All right. We're woefully short on time. I guess it's one of those things where you've got to read the book. And so I allowed you to get that out there. And I guess it's fine that people would read it. And I don't know if we're slamming Republicans. They're a big part of this country. It's just that, God, we're headed in the wrong direction. And in fact, the Republicans are, to some degree, blocking legislation that could begin to head us in the right direction. But I'm also complaining about a president who could seize on this terrible tragedy as an opportunity to sit down with the American people and say, look, either we do this now or else, truly, or else. from Manila in the Philippines. Another breakpoint already. Good morning, I'm Art Bell. We own the night and have for a long time. Welcome to Coast AM, everybody. The Chief Executive Officer of the National Wildlife Federation is my guest, Larry Schweiger, and we're discussing the oil spill, the climate, what's going on in our world right now, and I guess politics, because it's unavoidable in this venue. It's really unavoidable, and I understand that once you take a stance, whatever it is, you're going to have half or better than half of the people upset with you. But there comes a time when everybody has got to, I don't know, say what they feel, or it's going to be too late. And if we don't get moving, folks, pretty quickly, it's going to be too late. That time we've all been talking about, that tipping point, is getting very close. We've got to do something very soon. If we don't, well, a lot of you have children and grandchildren. They're going to be in a very, very different world than we live in right now. We'll be right back. Well, all right. Once again, and quickly, back to the phones. Wildcard line, good morning. You're on the air with Larry Schweiger, I hope.
Good morning, Art. What an honor and privilege it is to speak with you again, my friend. This is TJK7CD.
And I'd like okay. To- You ought not identify yourself in that manner, but go right ahead.
thank you, Art. And listen, I'd like to draw your recollection briefly to November of 2003, just prior to the presidential election, when you had hosted on KNYE a talk show where specifically we discussed whether or not we should be formulating a national energy policy in the United States. Mm-hmm. And then during that show, you afforded me the great opportunity to be able to discuss with you, as well as with Jim and Greg, this mm-hmm. very specific discussion. And I had promoted the fact that the administration then, as well as previous administrations, has been negligent in the United States presidency, that they should form the equivalent of a Manhattan Project to quickly identify and develop alternate forms of fuel energy for the United States so as to get us off of dependency of Middle Eastern oil, not just right. for economic reasons, but for national security reasons. Mm-hmm. And in light of what we're dealing with now, this horrible disaster, I mean, we are dealing with things that I fear are just on the horizon that is going to be more unbelievable than what we're already dealing with. I mean, we're dealing with GMO-modified food crops in this country that are devastating food crops. They're putting us on the brink of famine. We're dealing with the issue of honeybees that are dying off mysteriously that the best and brightest scientists can't identify what the cause is. And now we understand, because rain clouds are formulated over the seas with these horribly toxins, and not just the oil, but in this unidentified solvents that BP is using that they refuse to identify to the United States government what it consists of, because they hide behind the excuse of it being a confidential formulation. You know, what's going to happen when rain clouds form and they start to rain over our crops, these toxins, that's going to destroy the bees, the food, get into the food chain and make us sick. And my God, the poor people down there have lost their livelihoods. I mean, we're talking to millions of people. I mean, we think the Wall Street disaster in 2008 and 2009 was horrible. Wait until this happens. I mean, we learned many years ago that whenever there's a big hit on the economy, it takes anywhere from 9 to 12 months before it actually trickles down throughout the rest of the economy and infects all Americans. And my question to your distinguished guest, I would like to ask, in fact, plead with you, Larry, please. You are in a very unique position in history, quite literally, where you have the ear of a very distinguished former vice president of the United States who has a lot of integrity and character and who has been in the forefront of defending the environment as well as promoting the development of alternate fuels. I would like to ask you respectfully, sir, when you visit with your friend this weekend, will you please ask him, plead with him on behalf of the American public, to shift his platform and to put focus and effort and pressure on the current administration to literally develop immediately, put together the equivalent of a Manhattan Project to start developing alternate forms of energy to get us off of oil, to get us away from the dangers that we're facing now. And Art, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate and respect you tremendously. We love you, and we wish you well.
Okay, my friend. And if you would like to tackle that one, Larry, please proceed.
Well, let me say that Al Gore, about 2 years ago, gave a very powerful speech in Washington, D.C. Called Repower America. You can find it online if it's still out there. And it's worth watching because, in fact, that's what he called for, was that we shift our energy to a new energy source within 10 years and that we commit ourselves to a full-scale effort that would, and he used the example of President Kennedy's calling for a man on the moon within 10 years. We did it far short of that, but, you know, if we make up our mind, we can do a lot in this country, and it's just a matter of having the will and the political horsepower to get decisions done. And certainly, I don't want to speak for the former vice president, but he has been working very hard on that very topic for a long time.
If our president doesn't do this soon, it's going to be too late. His political capital is rapidly evaporating, and new presidents, particularly with the kind of problems this president has with our economy and now the oil spill, he's just not going to be able to have the political oomph to get it done if it's not done very, very quickly. So, I don't know. It saddens me. Let's go to, I guess it would be east of the Rockies or west of the Rockies. I'm not sure. They're not marked here. You're on the air. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir. It is you,
okay,
yes.
I'm sorry. Good morning, gentlemen. I guess I got two statements to make, and I'd like to sort of hear your comment on it. My first one, if every new home built today in America was a self-efficient home as far as generating its own power, and if they generate too much power, putting it back in the grid, I know you need transformers, mm-hmm. of that nature, but and it would be more of an expensive process on the house. I mean, I'd say $30,000 to $40,000 more for a home. But I feel that technology then, if that was mandated, technology would grow enough that technology could be adapted into homes that are presently built. That's my first comment. My second comment, now, wasn't Congress established to voice the people's Congress was established to speak for the people, if I'm correct, right?
Yes.
Okay. That was back in eons ago when that was established, where we did not have automobiles, we did not have telephones, we did not have the internet. Couldn't we get rid of Congress now that we have all of this?
And that would be a parliamentary system, sir, where they just get rid of people the moment they're unhappy with them. Larry?
Well, I think I'd like to address particularly the first part of that question. You know, when I bought my first computer, it was an Apple II. And it was a real clunky thing, and it had these big floppy disk drives, and it had an impact printer with it. And the total bill for that computer was like $9,000, and it barely could type a memo without having to slow down and catch up to the floppy disk. But I share that with you because I think the technology, once we start down the path to a new energy technology, we're going to see a couple things happen. One, the price of solar is going to drop quite dramatically. The efficiency will go up dramatically. And I think those are the kinds of things that will happen once we decide to do that. And until we move in that direction, we're going to have higher costs. But I think clearly if we commit to a new energy pathway, we'll see dramatic breakthroughs and we'll see the cost come tumbling down. And the important thing is having the public policy in place that drives that. We saw that with the telephone. You know, when they passed a law changing the rules, all of a sudden, we had cell phone towers everywhere. We've seen a tremendous transformation in the telephone industry in the last 20 years. We've seen the same thing with the internet, tremendous transformation as a result of a law that basically allowed people to set up their own websites and that sort of thing.
Sure.
So, you know, we've seen in the past when we pass the right kind of legal framework, that it actually stimulates incredible economic development and also stimulates lower costs. And, you know, I think that's what we're waiting for with energy. And that's why, frankly, so many people are fighting so hard to keep it from happening. Because if we turn this corner and move towards highly efficient homes and homes that produce electricity in their windows and on the rooftops, we're gonna have a different game, and everyone is gonna be able to play in that game because we're all gonna be producers of energy and not just consumers. And so it will shift the table quite heavily in the direction of the consumer, and I think that's a part of the dynamic that's playing out here. So, you know, in my mind, it's a matter of setting the policy in place first, and you know, we have a congressional system. We just need to make it work. It's up to us to be the lubricant to force our senators and House members to do the right thing. And once we do that, we'll see a tremendous opportunity for new jobs and for a truly a green economy coming out of this dark age of carbon.
Well, Larry, I think that's going to be the game, all right. It's just that I think the major player in the game is going to be closer to me here in the Philippines than to you there. Let's go to the, I guess, perhaps the first-time caller line. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I hear you indeed.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking my call. Larry, I can't think of anybody I'd rather be speaking to, and this is my first call tonight, and I just feel so privileged to be able to speak with you. My husband and I have a registered wildlife habitat in the city of Garden Grove, California.
Oh, wonderful.
And, and we've made our home a haven for wildlife for as long as we've been here. And I happen to be along the ilk of a consultant to master gardeners. And by the way, to address one of your earlier callers, we have plenty of bees. The problem is there's no habitat. It's dwindling. And I find that what we really need to be saying out there is getting the message across of what people need to be doing, because they're lost. They follow trends. They don't really know what they need to be doing to help the environment, to address the politicians, who to write to. And KFI does a really good job of this during the day with the hot topics. You know, they say who to write, who to call, who to email. And I think the Wildlife Federation could help in that respect, in that regard, to either via the internet in some way, get the word out, because people are hungry for the information. They just need the direction. And we give tours. We belong to a koi club. We have water gardens and lilies and you know, all of the different things that wildlife needs to survive. And man needs to learn to accept, to be willing to live with wildlife all over the globe. And if they want to save their environment and save other species, they have to accept that. And so if you can just help get that word out, what people need to be doing, and you will find they're hungry for that information. They want to learn how to save their climate and their environment and live with other species.
All right. Well, listen, we're short on time, but thank you very much for the call. And, of course, that's what your organization is doing and has always done, right, Larry?
Yes. In fact, if folks want to learn more about it, please go to nwf.org, and you can learn a lot about everything from backyard habitats that were mentioned. And if you look at our oil spill site, we also have a large section on climate change and on wildlife. And also, we spend a lot of our effort trying to bring more kids into the outdoors and through both backyard habitat programs and Green Hour and No Child Left Inside and a number of other important programs. So I would encourage listeners to check our website out.
Okay. Wildcard Line, good morning. You're on the air with Larry Schweiger and Art Bell.
Hi, Art. This is Larry in Fort Lauderdale. It's been a while.
Hi. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Quick comment and a question. I feel that we have to start looking at the Earth more like a spaceship. And when companies poke a hole in the bottom of the Earth in an area that man cannot reach with two hands or does something stupid in the atmosphere, it's sort of like opening the door on a spaceship. And we have to have some laws, maybe international laws, that say, wait a minute, some of this stuff that you're doing is so cataclysmic that if something happens, you just can't do it unless you have two or three relief wells that are, you know, within 10 feet of the main one to, you know, to stop something that's happening here. That was my comment. The question was, I feel that, and this is for the BP people listening in too, is that they're stonewalling us. I can just see their corporate councils filtering everything that comes out of there. And if they were to be more transparent and allow the news people to show the lower-level people that are operating the ROVs and do some voiceover of what they're trying to do, it might go $1 million in publicity for them and also let the American public know that people are trying to do something and take some of the stress and tension away because they see that, you know, the rake and file people are trying to cap this thing, are trying to do stuff. But I can see a very heavy hand in the full page ads and in their statements, their talking points. And it's very, very transparent in today's environment that the corporate attorneys may have written off the company and they're just trying to keep the CEOs out of jail. That was my impression.
You know, I had actually thought the same thing. Very good call. In other words, we get to see the pictures of the gushing oil and we only can guess at what's going on. Some sort of narrative, much the way NASA has provided so many times with the visuals they've given us, probably would be a good PR idea. Obviously, BP is doing all they can right now to shut the damn thing down. That would be a good PR move, I think, for BP to explain to people what they're actually doing and what we're actually seeing. Or maybe that's too much to ask. Larry?
Well, those are really good points. I think particularly going back to the original point, which is that we're allowing people to do things that are very, very dangerous. And, you know, we need to have good plans in place before we do that and understand the full implications. And that's why this decision by this local judge who incidentally owns stock in 8 oil companies to go back to drilling offshore is just so appalling because he's basically saying turn your headlights off and continue to drive down the highway. And that's irrational. And, you know, I think the president and the administration have been trying to be prudent here. And when you got a judge telling you not to be prudent, it's really, really troubling.
It is absolutely amazing to me as well. When something of this magnitude happens, that you don't stop for whatever period of time is required to figure out what in the hell went wrong so it doesn't happen again. I'm aware there are other wells, deeper wells, in fact, than the one that blew up and is giving us a problem right now. And so, yes, of course, you pause. Larry, it has been my pleasure, believe me, to have you on the air with us tonight. The time is all gone. Program's over, and that's it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, my friend, and I hope your book sells well.
Okay, thanks so much.
Take care. And again, folks, anybody who'd like to email me, you're welcome to do so. I'm Art Bell at mindspring.com, and I fully expect the flames to be probably larger than those in the Gulf. For now, though, and until next time, from Manila, Philippines, good night.